Free Talk Live.
Welcome to Liberty Conspiracy on Free Talk Live. I'm Gardner Goldsmith, the creator of The Liberty Conspiracy, which streams every Monday through Friday live starting at 6 p.m. Eastern Time on Rumble, Rockfin, and on my Twitter / X feed, that being at Gard Goldsmith. You can also find the show anytime after the fact on any of those platforms. And if you're looking for textual information, head over to my Substack, that being the Gardner Goldsmith Substack, and every Sunday you'll receive the Sunday News Assembly, at least 20 stories pertaining to individual liberty, plus expanded contextual information that helps draw out long-lasting lessons that can help us expand the purview and the number of people who believe in freedom. Thanks so much for listening, everyone. Let's get started. We're going to turn to the live version of a song that we often use for immigration. All right. With real footage on this official version from Iceland. Crazy. What an insane time. The only thing I wouldn't have liked being, at one of those shows or whatever, if there were like stinky, unwashed hippies, but some of the hippies cross the genres and stuff like that. These guys might have been a little bit too hard. And of course, the rise of Zeppelin sort of came as the hippiedom sort of slid down the toilet as it should have. But the hippies brought us some interesting psychedelic stuff. I'll say that. But I didn't like the folky. No, thank you. Please. Peter, Paul, and Mary. Oh, man. Jeez, I think I'd rather listen to show tunes on recycle for 5 hours than one Peter, Paul, and Mary song. I don't know. I don't want to test that. Either one would be torture. Let's turn to Howie Carr for some fun information as we see the ad from a Thrift Books that always pops up for me because Thrift Books is getting a lot of my money nowadays. All right, here it is, everybody. You saw this. I retweeted this twice, actually, re-exed it. Howie Carr has a piece on all the freebies for the migrants in Massachusetts. Now, again, I am a voluntarist, so therefore I oppose the state. I also recognize the benefits of open borders and the allowance of people to be able to make contracts with whom they want to contract. The government artificially decreasing the number of people with whom you can associate means eventually you're going to pay more, and they're going to be doing things that will protect certain groups and do things for certain favors for certain groups. So you should have that ability to be able to choose. You can save your money and then reinvest it in something else. As I said, when I did a study of time periods in the United States where they saw high amounts of immigrants coming in, I thought, okay, what do we see for native workers? Did they have higher unemployment or did they not? Well, it turns out, somebody already had done that study, the great Julian Simon, the author of The Ultimate Resource 1 and 2, which is the human mind. He's the one who had that bet against Paul Ehrlich, the neo-Malthusian, who said, after a certain number of years, let's bet, the two of them said, let's bet to see if a basket of goods on the stock market are actually more plentiful or less plentiful. And, you know, given inflation, more expensive or less expensive. And Simon said that human ingenuity is economics is the application of human ingenuity to a world of limited resources to discover new resources and turn things that weren't resources into new resources. The ultimate resource when faced with that scarcity is the human mind. And only through the competitive market process can people express where they would like other folks to apply their human minds and their skills to things that they value. That is the expression of freedom that brings us recognition of what is a resource to a person. And then the more people who recognize that resource, the more widely spread it becomes, and the more people will enter the market to provide it, the more they compete against each other, the more they drop prices. So having workers compete against each other is a good thing for the consumer. And eventually, it's also a good thing for the worker. This is what people often miss, that last part of it. They worry that the worker's not going to get work. Well, in that case, why don't you just make it harder to do everything? And then you have plenty of people employed. Like I said, productivity gains are the same thing. The first day in class, when I talk to the students about economics, I say, what are the simple machines? Let's go through these. Archimedes described these things, ancient Greece, but they were discovered way before that, not through intention, but primeval man, ancient man, would use an inclined plane or a lever without inventing it, saying, I'm going to figure out a way to do this lever. I'm going to invent the lever. No, they just realized that if they increased the distance over which they were doing their force, the force units could be less with more units. You would get the same work done, but it wouldn't be as hard. Now you can let one person with a tool get something up that formerly took two to lift. It's more distance on an inclined plane, but you're getting the work done. Now that guy's free. He's unemployed, but he's free to do something else. Now you're increasing productivity. You've got the inclined plane. This guy can do the work of two people, and the other guy can go do something else, right? Cool. You're decreasing your cost. Consumers want to decrease their costs. They don't want to increase their costs. They want to have money left over. They don't want to work harder for what they get in their lives. They want to work less. That's what all of human action inside economics tends to be. If you watch it, you can see that that's the way it seems to go, right? The epistemology of observing human action is that humans tend to try to decrease toil and increase their benefits. So if you can get your labor for less, just like you could get, the products that you need to work on for less, that's good. That's a good thing because you have money left over, and all that money can then be leveraged to start new businesses. And it's the new businesses that employ new people. Why do you want to keep people stuck being less productive when they could be more productive with fewer people and allow us to take that productivity gain and apply it someplace else, just like those two guys with the inclined plane? It is utter, it is axiomatic basic economics. So I am in favor of open borders. I'm in favor of 100% complete free trade because I don't have any right to tell my neighbor you can't trade freely and peaceably with that other person. If I can do it across national borders, why can't I do it across state borders or town borders or whatever? Just make sure everybody on my street only deals with people on my street. Where does it stop? The absurdity of it becomes revealed, right? And national interests and all those other expressions are simply another expression of, well, we know what is an essential industry and what is a non-essential industry. I used to have conversations with Pat Buchanan about this all the time. I couldn't shake him out of it, especially when he was getting a lot of support from unions and auto industries. But he was pleasant in the conversations. And again, you know, he's a small government guy in many cases, but he did think that government should be involved with picking winners and losers when it came to tariffs and blocking foreign goods. Now, there's the added mixture there, unfortunately, of the government burdening so many American businesses around here that they are not as competitive as foreigners. And people do say, well, what about foreign countries like China, where we hear that they use slave labor from prisons and things like that? I don't want to tell my neighbor, I'm going to decide for you what you can investigate and not investigate. I'm going to close those doors for you. You've got to use your moral agency, not me. Okay. And the fact that you're buying from one person doesn't mean that you're harming another person. Doesn't mean that you're engaging in the positively or negatively aggressive act of harming somebody else. That would mean that women have to date every guy who has to come up and ask them, who comes up and asks them to date them, right? That you're somehow harming them by saying, no, thank you. I'd rather freely associate with this person. How long? How much? How often? It's not for me to decide. Just leave people alone. And that applies to the border. Unfortunately, the state is involved with guarding the border. And in this case, it's the central government, as I mentioned. That's a bad idea. It's unconstitutional. It's supposed to be the states. And we see that with this central planning, everybody argues over how it's going to be done. And of course, the artifice of a border that is run through the state means that all the taxpayers are forced to pay for it. And then the politicians who aren't using their own money decide it's going to go here. How do you know anybody wants it to go there? You don't. You force them. You just force them all to pay. And anybody who doesn't want to pay is still going to have to pay. So political borders are an artifice. They're frauds. They don't represent any value or any representation that actually any person, any single person can be cited to say, yes, I want my money put there, because the state takes it from them without their choice. And it gives you the options. You're going to have a police this way by Joe Biden. You're going to have a police this way by Donald Trump. What's going to happen? Well, of course, conservatives have fallen into this because they think that the one thing the U.S. government is supposed to do is defend the nation. And they think that that is defending the nation. Well, there's a process in the Constitution, this being an anarchist discussing it, that outlines and delineates what is supposed to be done on the border. And then when the feds can come in, and they can't come in unless a state legislature or the governor asks them to come in, or if they declare a war against an invading army and say that there is an invasion, or they claim that they're not members of an army from an invading state and uniformed under the colors of the state. They are just people coming in. Therefore, they can do letters of marque and reprisal and hire mercenaries on the federal level. OK, that's all they can do. That's it. This is unfortunate because it now has blossomed and manifest into these very things on the state level, where they have so-called sanctuary cities. And the governor of Massachusetts, when she was running for governor, Maura Healey, and the mayor of Boston, you see her there, Michelle Wu, they both are very in favor of sanctuary cities. But bubbling under the surface was their knowledge that they wanted to get money from Alejandro Mayorkas and the Biden administration to cover their costs. So they called it an emergency. And this is what they've done in New York and New York State and New York City and so on, out in Illinois. They keep doing this because they know they're going to get a big payoff from the government, which isn't supposed to have anything to do with this. Howie Carr has put together a list of some of the things that you can get if you are in Massachusetts that the governor is going to hand out to you. You can find this list on the first tweet that I put out about this. His second tweet goes directly to his story link here at thehowiecarshow.com. You get free hotel rooms at $150+ a day if you're an illegal migrant. Again, this is based on the federal government's terminology of illegal. This is supposed to be left up to the states, but this is the way they're working it in Massachusetts, because when Maura Healey declared that there was an emergency, that kicked in a 1986 statute under the Dukakis administration when he was governor, that they have to cover these people claiming sanctuary. So they have to give them room and board, all that stuff, food, that sort of stuff. Three meals a day at $64 per person per diem. Free on-site medical and dental services, including condoms. Special diet for Ramadan. Free same-day dry cleaning with free pickup and delivery. Free housekeeping twice a week. Free cell phones, chargers, and charging ports. Free tablets and iPads. Free clothing, new and used. Everyone got new free winter coats, gloves, and shoes. You get free toiletries, toothpaste, deodorant, special so-called ethnic shampoos, skin cream, aspirin, toothbrushes, and feminine hygiene products. And they have these things for kids, too. For children, they have free diapers, wipes, diaper pails, cribs, bassinets, playpens, baby bottles, baby formulas, free car seats, free new mother bags, playrooms for young illegals with free toys and books, which must be replaced often because of destruction. Yes. We're on the heels of destruction, right? So we're on the edge of destruction. I can't remember. So again, like I said, if you want to get in the gravy, thanks to the woman who's cited right there, looking very much like she's in one of her Beneath the Planet of the Apes gowns underground under New York City. Just pretend that you speak a foreign language and then head on over. Finally, I want to mention, not that any of the people who will be collecting off the government dole on anything. And it's not just foreign people coming in. You know, welfare is immoral, whether it's done through for Americans or anybody. And it comes on so many different levels, whether it's education for kids, and God forbid anybody speak up against government-run education. You must hate kids. Or it's health care or food, or it's government welfare for various businesses like, you know, EVs, or even decades and decades ago, some of the setups that the U.S. government and the British government made for some of the oil companies in the Middle East. None of it is moral. Now let's look at, of course, how some people have been trying to get moral ways to earn a living, and they're being driven out of the cities in which they've been working. AEIR reported on this on the 22nd, and I was going to report it, but we were so full of everything that I didn't get to it. And I want to compliment James Harrigan for getting this out there. He writes, last week, the Minneapolis City Council passed an ordinance to increase rideshare driver pay by $1.40 per mile and 51 cents per minute while carrying a passenger. Mayor Jacob Frey vetoed the measure, but the council took little time in overriding that veto in a 10-3 vote. Quote, this is a David and Goliath story, said Robin Wansley, a council member who helped author the policy rather than opening up her own and starting her own competitive business, writes Mr. Harrigan. He says, and she's right. It is obviously a David and Goliath story. She just has the players incorrectly cast. The situation in Minneapolis is a near-perfect microcosm of the minimum wage debate as it has played out in the United States over the past couple of decades. Actually, more than that, going back 70 years almost. The fact that rideshare drivers are independent contractors, that is notwithstanding. The players are always the same: capital, labor, and politicians. Capital wants labor costs as low as they can possibly be. Why? Because consumers want labor costs as low as they can possibly be. Labor wants, because the capital people are also consumers, and they have to respond to the final consumer. The final employer is you at the final buying end. You're the employer. So if you want to get a deal, how dare you? You money-grubbing slug. Right? Labor wants wages as high as they can. That terminology obviously used in various forms by the politicians who take your money without your choice. Labor wants wages as high as they can be. And politicians, now, what is that as high as they can possibly be? He writes, what does that mean? As high as they can possibly be while retaining their jobs and not seeing the jobs go to competitors. Right? Right. And who decides that? The consumer. And politicians want to appear as though they're doing the right thing in order to win or even buy votes. It has ever been so. So what has happened in Minneapolis, and what typically happens? In short, workers either agree to take jobs at the wages they are offered or they don't. If enough of them refuse, wages necessarily rise. Why? Because when the supply of something goes down and demand doesn't change, the price rises. This is as true of labor as it is of Taylor Swift tickets. Left to their own devices, employers and workers will inevitably come to an answer that serves both of their interests. But that sort of mutually beneficial arrangement has never made politicians all that happy, as it inevitably proves that people don't need them all that much. So what do? They mandate things, because all government can do in the end is mandate or forbid things. In the case of labor, government mandates certain wages, regardless of what the parties to the employment agreement would have agreed to if left alone. This happens at the federal level, where the minimum wage is $7.25 an hour, at the state level, where it varies from the federal minimum wage to Washington's $16.28 per hour mark, and in Washington, D.C., which has the highest minimum wage in the United States at $17 an hour. When costs go up, the money to pay for the increase can only come from one of three places: customers paying higher prices, business owners earning less profit, or workers being laid off, losing work hours, or losing benefits. This is as true of labor costs as it is with hamburger meat electricity, or truck tires. In the end, costs are costs. And in Minneapolis, the politicians went too far. How do we know? Uber and Lyft both announced within days of the city council's decision that they would cease operations in the Twin Cities. Bum-ba-dum-ba-dum. There you go. Buddy Rich is what I was thinking about, the drummer. Buddy Rich. Got to see Buddy Rich and his band. They were great. My cousin actually took drum lessons with Buddy Rich. My cousin Danny. Danny Butcheroni, son of Dan Butcheroni, the boxer known as the Butcher in the 50s, was going to go up against, I think, Hurricane Jackson, and got drugged by one of his coaches, and he quit that afternoon. Said, okay, I'm out of here. Freegan. Freegan and Rumble says, Taylor Swift is a boy. Oh, man. That got me laughing. Feel free to drop jokes, anything, comments, links, anything you want inside X on that side column thing and inside Rockfin and Rumble as well. I really appreciate everybody. Now, got to say, as we head out of the flash, I want to mention to everyone, I really appreciate all the hard work and spreading the word about the show. We've become so massive. We have such a giant staff. You got it. We got a new advertiser. It's one of these sort of like universal gadgets. So I want to let you know about them. Check them out. I think you're going to dig them. Here we go.
Hey, this is Vince McCann. Wow. Look, I got to talk fast because this headset's killing me. A long time ago, politicians discovered the most amazing cleaning product, the Con Wow. Just look at all the abuse this Con Wow can take. You can use it to clean up spills, clean cons, and look how it absorbs this blood and saliva from a detainee held by the CIA. Con Wow can do it all. Be wrung out and used again any way the government wants. It wasn't designed this way, but politicians are so inventive, this super malleable document can be used for anything. Healthcare? Con Wow. Bailouts? Con Wow. Look, you can even pick up urine spilled from this government-funded artwork. Can an ordinary constitution do this? No way. Con Wow does it all. Listen, you gotta call now, got it? Because the Con Wow might not be available much longer. Call right away and we'll even give you this great set of media blinders. They're perfect for the beach, ball game, or to make yourself and the populace oblivious to government crimes. It's all yours for just $19.95. You gotta call now. NSA wiretappers are standing by.
Sounds like a deal to me, everybody. I'm digging that big time. What do y'all think? Got to get your Con Wow as soon as possible. It's a great promise, and it has definitely stopped them, right? We'll return with more Liberty Conspiracy on Free Talk Live.
Eleutheromania, the insatiable desire for freedom.
We have been enslaved for all our lives.
It's the new three-song heavy metal EP from Captain Kickass.
The next ones, they will.
Available now on your favorite music app or get it directly from CaptainKickass.com.
Live. Welcome back to Liberty Conspiracy on Free Talk Live. Let's talk about this omnibus budget, of course, that late Thursday they passed, and then we played some segments. You saw Rand Paul talk about it goes on like the psychedelic furs. It just keeps going on and on and on. Well, I got to write about this yesterday, so here it is. And there are some other parts of this that I want to make sure that I add to this about the warmongering stuff and the invite of Netanyahu. They're all mixed in with our wonderful House Speaker, Mike Johnson. What a guy, huh? What a guy, what a hero. So I wrote, dismissing dark portents of federal debt growing by nearly $1 trillion every quarter. It's every 100 days, everybody. Disregarding these sinister clouds of price increases, job and productivity losses, and opportunity costs that smother the U.S. economy because of all the previous U.S. budgets going back decades, House Speaker Mike Johnson, Republican of law, Senate Majority Leader Chuckie Schumer, no, he's not very funny, just like his niece, of New York, and Minority Leader Mitch McConnell of Kentucky and their cronies in Congress late Thursday and Friday pass their omnibus, the glorious second half of their U.S. budget, after passing on March 8th their stopgap first half. Oh, remember those good old days, everybody? Remember, they're like, this is the first half. We got to get it done. March 8th. Wow, we're all going to die. The world's going to explode. We're going to step on a crack, and mother's back's going to go crack-a-lacka. And then they did it, and they're like, we'll be back. I'm like, no, you don't have to come back. We're fine. They're like, no, we'll be back. And they came back. Yeah, they came back. So let's continue. You likely won't be surprised to know that both these so-called discretionary and non-discretionary halves of these were filled with enough pork to fill billions of slaughterhouses. But you might be surprised to discover that many of those who voted for the poison actually have the gall to claim that they're doing their constitutional duty. Oh, hey, they published this on YouTube already. It's sitting right in front of my face. It's not out on Rumble yet. So let's check it out. There'll probably be like one of those YouTube ads. This is going to be my first blush. Let's check out what the editors did today. I shot the videos this morning and sent them down and stuff like that. So let's see.
House Speaker Mike Johnson, Republican of Louisiana. Senate Majority Leader Chuck Schumer, Democrat of New York. Minority Leader Mitch McConnell, Republican of Kentucky, and their cronies in Congress late Thursday and Friday passed their omnibus, the glorious second half of their U.S. budget after passing on March 8th, their stopgap first half. Now, you likely won't be surprised to know that both the so-called discretionary and non-discretionary halves of these were filled with enough pork to fill billions of slaughterhouses. But you might be surprised to discover that many of those who voted for this poison actually have the gall to claim they're doing their constitutional duty. Hi, everyone. I'm Gardner Goldsmith for MRC TV. And here's the story. As the LA Times observes, quote, the House approved a $1.2 trillion package of spending bills Friday, just a few hours before funding for some key federal agencies was set to expire, a long overdue action nearly 6 months into the budget year that will push any threats of a government shutdown to the fall. The bill passed by a vote of 286 to 134 and now moves to the Senate, where leadership hoped for a final vote later Friday. More than 70% of the money would go to defense. Would it? Really? At least there were some souls inside those august halls of filth and pork who actually called out some of the more insane earmarks that the majorities in both houses passed. Rand Paul, Republican of Kentucky, Friday on the Senate floor noted how little time the members were given to read the so-called budget. Quote, when did we get it? At 2:32 a.m. on Thursday. And now it's rush, rush, rush. We got to get that money out the door.
Here's a couple of the new earmarks that are in this bill. $2 million for the construction of a kelp and shellfish nursery in Maine. Another earmark that we discovered in this bill is $1.5 million to encourage video gaming in New York. $249,000 for the Baltimore Symphony. There's $1 million for Cambridge, Massachusetts Community Center to install some solar panels. Now look, I like solar panels as well as anybody. I think it's really kind of cool to get some of your energy from solar panels. But this is a rich community. This is where Harvard is. This is where, you know, some of the largest, most successful corporations and research are in Boston. You think they can't pay for solar panels? Solar panels aren't the general welfare. Our founding fathers said that all spending and taxation had to be for the general welfare, and they went one step further. In Article 1, Section 8, they laid out all the powers of Congress, all the things that we're allowed to do. And not listed in those was to buy solar panels for one town.
Rand also noted, quote, we have a $34 going on $35 trillion debt. The biggest payment now in our budget within about a year is going to be the interest on that debt. End quote. Congressman Robert Aderholt, Republican of Arkansas, offered additional coloring to all of that, citing just a few of the graft destinations that traditional moral people might find offensive, and noting the politicians who pushed for them. And the list goes on and on. You can check out the link in my written piece to see that. The Rhino Democrat majority, well, they even killed amendments that would have stopped Biden from using tax cash to facilitate migrant flights around the U.S., and they killed an amendment to stop CBDC, central bank digital currency, being used by the government to replace cash. I think we know where they want to go. But, you know, I'd like to stress that I think that one of the key takeaways that I'd like to share is that these high profile earmarks and offensive handouts shouldn't be seen in isolation, as if other less immediately offensive recipients of the graft can be given a pass. Even the so-called non-discretionary spending is composed of a motley assortment of mostly unconstitutional federal programs funded through the immorality of taxation and its evil partner, inflation-feeding borrowing, that eventually will be paid with more taxation and more borrowing. This new budget is a financial, fiscal, constitutional disaster. But moreover, it sheds light on the moral bankruptcy that lies at the heart of all assumptions that politicians can somehow take my neighbor's earnings, that they can do it for any reason, especially that they can fatuously claim it's for our benefit. If I can't morally steal from you or threaten you to pay me what you earn or a portion of what you earn, well, my admittance into a gang called Congress or my vote for it to be done doesn't make the coercion and theft any more moral. Thanks for watching, everybody. Please like and subscribe. Find us at Rumble where they don't.
Well, that one, I got to say, that's the first time in a while that I've found numerous areas where I'm not too satisfied with the edits. I didn't like the use of the visual of Bitcoin because that's completely different than CBDC. And this is one of the disadvantages of actually not being in the offices with those guys and, you know, being able to, you know, have the video editor call me over and say, what do you think of this? What do you think of that? Which is, you know, the way it would normally go. I'm just going to have to ride with that one. I might not even promote that particular video because the written article had a lot more in there. And one of the major portions of it was the money that already has been given to Ukraine and the money that is inside this that also goes to Israel, and people aren't discussing it. So I want to go back because the printed piece actually does have this in there. And so you'll see here, as I said, the LA Times observes the House approved a $1.2 trillion package of spending bills Friday, just a few hours before funding for some key, they call them key federal agencies, was set to expire. A long overdue action nearly 6 months in the budget year that will push any threats of a government shutdown to the fall. Oh, glory be. The bill passed by a vote of 286 to 134 and now moves to the Senate. And of course, it was passed by the Senate, where the leadership hoped for a final vote later Friday. And of course, they got it. More than 70% of the money would go to defense. And this is a major portion that they cut out of the video. So I want to express it here to you. And please spread the word, everybody. Dingodare on X says, Debtor Nation. Bang, right on. Good to have you there, Dingodare. I love that handle. That's great. So I said, they said more than 70% of the money would go to defense. So I said, would it? Really? Can anyone with a straight face actually claim that the U.S. government has been engaged in defense of us, our rights, or the Constitution for the past 70 years? In February, both houses passed $61 billion to deliver weapons and other so-called aid to Ukraine, evidently the 51st state, and $14 billion to send similar lucre to Israel, the 52nd state, in complete contravention of the U.S. Constitution. And this budget sees more foreign shellouts. So what exactly are those sworn Constitution defenders defending? Oh, by the way, everybody, I do want to mention real quick Tomorrow, 5 a.m. U.S. time, East Coast, they're going to have the decision on extradition on Julian Assange. I just want to make sure I mentioned that. I want to talk about it again before the end of the show, but I wanted to do it a couple times during the show so people have that info. If you're probably seeing it out there. People are, tweeting and putting stuff out there on Instagram and stuff, I'm sure. So taking a longer-term philosophical and logical tack here, I wrote about this budget. How can any sane U.S. civilian adjudge as defense of his or her rights a political machine that can at any time demand more of his or her property and wealth while fatuously claiming it's for his or her safety? And then I said, some people correctly call that what it is. Government is a protection racket. But with serious looks and self-congratulating rhetoric, these thieving neo-mafia collectivists arrogantly claim that they're doing us a service and that we who want to be left alone are the bad guys and opponents of progress, opponents of their bald-faced lawlessness. We're the ones who put Americans at risk. Sure. At least there were some souls inside these august halls of filth and pork who actually called them out. So you see Rand Paul there, and they have my quotes, but they extended the quote into some of the information that I covered last week when we played Rand talking about the general welfare. As I mentioned, that's a canard. It's logically unsustainable, and it collapses under its own weight because welfare is subjectively determined by every individual. The state can't determine what a general welfare is other than leaving people alone to determine what their welfare is individually. And from there, that is how you can promote a general welfare. The government deciding what is general welfare means the government is deciding for you and can decide against your personal welfare for the welfare of the gestalt, of the group. It's consequentialist. It's utilitarian. Its ends justifies the means. It's immoral. And it has nothing to do with the protection of rights. Because, of course, the state doesn't protect rights. The entire superstructure of mentality is behind exactly that, that you can be roped into this for your so-called protection and they'll determine what your protection is. It's the same thing, just reworded in a different way rather than general welfare. It's public protection or public health. None of it is true. It's all false. It's all fake. It's nothing. And it's a lie. It's the great lie of the state. And we'll continue, and it's all its rhetorical permutations. And so we go through a lot of these things that you saw Rand discuss. Then I did want to mention some of these, though, from Robert Aderholt of Arkansas. They just flashed these on the screen. When I shot the video, I actually recorded every one of these things. And I wanted to see if they wanted to pick or choose and put any of these in here, because there are a lot from a lot of different states. So we've got this person named Senator Reed, a Democrat of Rhode Island, and Senator Whitehouse, Democrat of Rhode Island, $1.8 million for Women and Infants Hospital, which provides late-term abortions. Then my old friend, who first time I ever spoke to her, she slammed the phone down on me when she was a state senator. Now U.S. Senator, millionaire Jean Shaheen gives $650,000 of your dollars and your progeny's dollars, if they can survive the jabs and all the other stuff, get them away from those, to Dartmouth Hitchcock Nashua. I know exactly where it is. And they routinely provide late term abortions. Then Senator Gillibrand, Democrat of New York, $146,000 to Epicha Community Health Center in New York for LGBTQ family services to youth. Ed Markey had an interesting run in with him on a plane one time. And he got $850,000 for an LGBTQ senior housing service thing in Massachusetts and for free drug needle exchange, plus some illegal migrant stuff. Then there's Booker. Yes, that very, very not egotistical guy in any way whatsoever. His Spartacus moment. He came out with $400,000. He once said, I think this is my I'm Spartacus moment, as Mr. Spartacus came out with $400,000 for Garden State Equality Education Fund of New Jersey. That's LGBTQ youth, because, it's awesome. And as I mentioned, the list goes on and on, just like Rand said, or the psychedelic furs. It goes on and then it goes around again. And again, if you want to get a great song about British politics or about the party life of art schnobblers in London. It works on two levels. It goes on. Psychedelic Furs, second album. The album's called Talk, Talk, Talk. Has Pretty in Pink on it, Dumb Waiters, She Is Mine, and It Goes On is incredible. And he says, you know, this guy who lives downstairs has parties all the time, political parties as well, where they put on wigs and stuff. It could be hair wigs or wigs, as in WHIG, the political party, so they can be themselves. He calls you this and calls you that. You lose your memory, political rhetoric, politics, can't pandering to people. He goes, all this goes on all the time, so I don't go down there. Right on, Richard. Way to go. So I said the Rhino Dem majority even killed amendments that would have stopped Biden from using tax cash to facilitate migrant flights around the U.S. and to stop CBDC. And they did something else that I thought was very important and is not in the written piece about, of course, we mentioned UNRWA or UN. Yeah, UNRWA, the UN Relief Agency for Palestine. So we'll talk about that in a little bit. So then I just mentioned it's a false dichotomy they offer when the D.C. crowd and either big political party tell us that there is discretion. Now, I don't approve of that money, but these are hypocrites. These are people who typically would include all sorts of welfare money going all over the place. But in this case, they pulled it away from the U.N. because the U.N. has spoken out about the Israeli genocide in Gaza. So it's another way to basically starve out those people in Gaza. And it's amazing to see the massive towering hypocrisy of so many of these politicians. And let me give you an example of that in just a minute, thanks to sources from anti-war and some extra work that I did doing some investigation. I said, 'tis a false dichotomy they offer when the D.C. crowd in either big political party tells us there is discretionary and non-discretionary spending, because most of the things they claim must be funded are not sanctioned by their U.S. Constitution. And I said, but, and this is key, even if they and enough state politicians ganged up to amend the Constitution and allow most of these things, that wouldn't make it morally justified for the government to forcefully expropriate any of my neighbor's cash. So let me know your thoughts, everybody. Now, with that stated, now I want to turn to, I want to turn to anti-war. And just show you what was inside the budget that people aren't discussing. Dave DeCamp had this yesterday, released it at 2:09 p.m. yesterday. Government funding bill signed by Biden includes $3.8 billion in military aid for Israel, and it cuts funding for the UNRWA. It's RWA. I keep forgetting about that. So there you are, right? That's it. I'll make myself small so this can really take prominence here. If you're just listening, I just made it big on the screen. Make myself big, as the cat would say. The $1.2 trillion government funding package that President Biden signed into law on Saturday includes $3.8 billion in annual military aid for Israel. Now, this is something that typically is in there, as we know, for the past, I don't know how many years they've been doing $3.8 billion. It's basically an automatic thing unless they remove it. So they didn't even discuss it. Nobody's even talking about this. And they want even more money after they already sent out $16 billion a few weeks ago to Israel to continue slaughtering people. And we know they're going after Rafah. They've been bombing it, and they're going to send troops in on the ground. And they've closed off basically 90-some percent of the food gates. They're not allowing food to go through. Unbelievable footage. If you got to see Grand Theft World last night, they had some amazing footage from all sorts of people, whether it's Young Turks. They've been doing great work on this. Al Jazeera doing excellent work. So many different people. Electronic Intifada, Jimmy Dore, just excellent, just amazing. And of course, the Gray Zone. They were showing footage of Israeli civilians blocking at the Egyptian border, blocking food. And the Israeli and Egyptians militaries back off. In fact, the Israeli military encourages them, and they all sit down and enjoy food together. It's incredible. And they have testimony from the people like, oh, yeah, you know, they allow us to do it because it sort of lifts. It gives them, gives them a rationale that, you know, we're going to be stopping the trucks. They don't have to do it. And they're there every day or every other day. You know, the guy's like, oh, yeah, I'm here three times a week. I'll show it to you tomorrow. It's incredible. The U.S. provides Israel with $3.8 billion in military aid. You saw that in Article 9 zillion of the Constitution. Remember that? Remember those glorious days when you had the class in school and they were like, oh, this is the Israeli clause. Oh, yeah, I remember that one. That was fun. That was great. Wasn't that on Fish Day? Yeah, it was. We had the fish sticks and everybody had a great time. School was great. The U.S. provides Israel with $3.8 billion in military aid each year under a 10-year memorandum of understanding. Remember when you signed that? I remember. That was fun, too. That was on Taco Tuesday. We all got together and we signed that memorandum of understanding. That was awesome. I hope we can go back someday. Maybe get the doc and go back in the DeLorean to those glorious days of when we signed that memorandum of understanding that we'd give them our money to kill people and, you know, have bombs. Yeah. The $3.8 billion is divided into two categories, $3.3 billion in foreign military financing, FMF, which provides foreign governments with money to purchase U.S. arms. Get that stock in Boeing. Get it right away. Don't worry about the problems with the planes or what was that man's name? John Barnett. Was it Barnett? You know, who obviously, clearly, we all know, you know, he died by his own hand after testifying and being one of the greatest people with testimony against Boeing safety protocols that people have ever imagined. Yeah, even though he said he would never take his own life, probably did. Because when people say they're not going to take their own life, what they really mean is they're going to take their own life. And it has absolutely nothing to do with corporate murder. No. Shh. Quiet. You didn't see anything, penguins. Yes. And then they have the $3.3 billion in military aid. And then they have $500 million to fund Israeli missile defense systems. Because it's just, you know. The pro-Israel American lobby group AIPAC, APAC, celebrated the signing of the funding bill and noted that the military aid for Israel is still unconditional. Isn't that great? They went on X. Yeah, even though they think that, you know, X is somehow filled with anti-Semitic people. Anybody who criticizes their policies of slaughter and genocide. Isn't that great? So let's just mention again here another headline, this one from America's Middle East, AA.com. U.S. Congress passes temporary budget, approves new military aid to Israel, halts funding to UNRWA. There's a lot more coming up with Liberty Conspiracy on Free Talk Live.
This hour of Free Talk Live is brought to you by Dash Digital Cash. Dash is the cryptocurrency designed to be used for spending. Rising fees have made Bitcoin useless for purchases, but Dash continues to have fees less than 1 cent per transaction, and its features ensure Dash is undefeated as the most useful cryptocurrency in the marketplace. From a technical standpoint, Dash transactions are irreversible, and its network is protected from 51% attacks by their Chainlocks technology. There's no need to wait for a confirmation before considering a Dash transaction complete, so it's great for merchants. Dash is one of the oldest cryptocurrencies and is widely available on exchanges, including the decentralized Maya protocol, and in multi-crypto wallets. It's easy to get and use Dash. Start by learning more at Dash.org. Big thanks to the Dash DAO for sending us 32 Dash per month to promote Dash on the air. Visit Dash.org to learn about Dash. Dash.org.
Free Talk Live.
We return with more Liberty Conspiracy on Free Talk Live. Find Liberty Conspiracy every Monday through Friday on Rumble, Rockfin, and on my Twitter feed. That is at Guard Goldsmith, G-A-R-D Goldsmith. And of course, find us after the fact and send those links out to everyone you think might be interested in the principles of individual liberty. We're now going to get into the details of the hearing regarding Julian Assange's appeal to stop his extradition from Great Britain to the United States. There are some really evil totalitarian types in Congress, like Mike Rogers of Michigan And he really is. I've run into that guy before. I think he was back in McCain for a while. He's a real trip, a very aggressive person when I was around him. Very aggressive and very unpleasant. So let's turn that smile upside down there, Justin. And Justin Amash wrote this. Mike Rogers defends unconstitutional, warrantless surveillance of Americans, telling the House Intelligence Committee that, quote, somebody must be doing something exactly right at the NSA. You can't have your privacy violated if you don't know your privacy is violated, right? Really? Let's hear from this fatuous fascist.
Falls in the forest. It makes a noise whether you're there to see it or not.
And I would argue that maybe the fact that we haven't had any complaints come forward with any specificity arguing that their privacy has been violated clearly indicates in 10 years, clearly indicates that something must be doing right. Somebody must be doing something exactly right.
But who would be complaining?
Somebody whose privacy was violated. You can't have your privacy violated if you don't know your privacy is violated, right? Can you?
I disagree with that. I mean, I think if the tree falls in the forest, it makes a noise whether you're there to see it or not.
Well, that's a new interesting standard in the law. Like, we're going to have this conversation, but we're going to have wine because that's going to get a lot more interesting.
Fair enough.
Oh, boy. What a fun guy, huh? We're going to have some wine off of the taxpayers' backs as we completely urinate that wine onto the U.S. Constitution. Talking about the law. Wow. Jeez. Just dishonorable, disingenuous, disgraceful. We'll put the three D's out there. Just amazing. Talking about disgraceful. It's time to go into our first big story, everybody. And for that, let's turn. In this case, I want to rock out a little bit. We're going to turn to Thin Lizzy as channeled through Fu Manchu. You know, sometimes I wish that people in England would just storm that prison where they're keeping Julian Assange, tear those walls down, blast it apart, and get him out of there. But of course, that is impossible. There'd be a massive standoff. Guy did nothing wrong. So we tie it into our first opening music as we started the show with Free Me from Roger Daltrey, that from the film McVicar, in which he starred. And I didn't know about that song till my brother introduced me to it. And it is a great song. So let's turn first off to this information from Twitter. This coming from Glenn Greenwald. And at first blush, a lot of people might have been encouraged by this, but no. UK court hands Assange, 5 o'clock this morning, a little bit after 5 this morning, 10 their time, a partial victory in the Biden DOJ's attempt to extradite him. To me, I don't see this as anything other than slippery language that will, of course, rely on the United States to just say, oh, yeah, sure, absolutely, because everybody knows you can trust the United States, just like Mr. Rogers said, right, Mike? Oh, yeah, it's totally cool. There's no problem. U.S. must provide explicit. This is what the High Court in England said, that Julian Assange can pursue his appeal. And they want from the United States explicit. This is what the High Court of England wants before anything can happen to extradite. The U.S. must provide explicit assurances that Julian Assange, one, can raise a First Amendment defense. They claim that since he's not in the United States, he has no right to free speech. It's ridiculous. It says Congress shall pass no law. that law would apply to anybody, whether they're outside the United States or inside the United States. It's a mechanistic prohibition, and it applies to everybody upon whom the United States might want to write those laws. You can't write those laws. It doesn't matter whether you're trying to apply them to foreigners or people who live in Vermont. It doesn't matter, Mr. Rogers. That they can raise their First Amendment defense and they'll have the same rights as U.S. citizens, that he has the same rights as U.S. citizens, and that he will never face the death penalty. Well, even if they imprison him for X number of years, that's essentially a death penalty for a man who did nothing wrong. In our video, you saw the footage of the collateral damage video that was leaked and given to WikiLeaks that was evidence of war crimes that Bradley, then Bradley, now Chelsea Manning, changed names, not sexes or genders, can't do sex or anything like that, but changed name, Chelsea Manning, released. And Private Manning would have been committing a war crime if Private Manning hadn't reported about what had happened there, what U.S. forces did there, to use the active voice. Shooting reporters and then shooting the rescuers in the Middle East who were trying to help them. So at first blush, this looks okay. There's a deadline of April 16th, right, you guys? Well, maybe not. There's more to this. I want to show you a little bit more information here, everybody. Because if you see this, you'll see that the Assange story gets a little trickier. So Joe Loria reports this. The High Court on Tuesday rejected five Assange grounds for a new appeal, agreeing he had only three legitimate arguments, but that the U.S. could nullify them with new assurances. Here's a little more. The High Court in London on Tuesday gave the United States an opportunity to rebuff Julian Assange's plea that he be allowed to appeal the Home Office's order to extradite him to the U.S. to face espionage charges. The Espionage Act, of course, they're using it. There's no war. What secrets does the U.S. have? How can they rightfully take your money and then claim you can't see the results of that money? In a complex ruling at the Royal Courts of Justice, the court agreed that with Assange, that he had grounds to ask for an appeal, but they invited the United States to give the court assurances by April 16th that could negate Assange's arguments. So, of course, the United States is going to give assurances. Oh, yeah, no problem. Yeah, it's fine. Yeah, no problem. Specifically, the two-judge panel ruled that Assange had grounds to appeal because his extradition was incompatible with his rights of expression in the European Convention on Human Rights, that he might be prejudiced because of his nationality, people might prejudge him, and because he had inadequate protection against the death penalty. However, the court is allowing the U.S. to give written assurances that all these rights won't be violated. If the U.S. misses an April 16th deadline, then Assange will be allowed to appeal, which, of course, will take months, but only on those three grounds. Significantly, Tuesday's ruling did not allow Assange to introduce new evidence. And this is one of the key things I wanted to give to you in the case that came to light after the lower court ruling, namely that the CIA and Mike Pompeo plotted to kidnap and assassinate Assange from the Ecuadorian embassy in London, where, of course, the CIA already had gotten in and planted surveillance devices. As I've mentioned, kudos to my old roommate, Sean Naylor, for being one of the three guys who exposed that. Where, of course, Assange had asylum before being arrested and thrown into Belmarsh prison, where he continues to languish, now coming up on his fifth year there. Or totaling five-year anniversary. Stella Assange said, Today's decision was astounding. This is Consortium News, by the way, if you didn't know. Today's decision was astounding, Stella Assange, Julian's wife, told reporters outside the Royal Courts of Justice. The courts recognized that Julian has been exposed to flagrant denial of his freedom of expression rights, that he is being discriminated against on the basis of his nationality, and that he remains exposed to the death penalty. But she said the U.S. has been invited to send a letter saying it's all okay. Now, when was the last time U.S. assurances meant anything? Whether you are, say in Russia, and James Baker in the 90s promises that NATO won't expand into the former Iron Curtain nations, or it's the United States, John Kirby saying, we have rules and procedures that we know we want the Israelis to follow as we keep continuing to fund them weapons. Or there are assurances that they take oaths to the Constitution, which includes the Fourth Amendment, and they're not supposed to spy on you without a warrant. Mike, out of Michigan, Mr. so-called politician. Amazing. Let's check out Russell Brand on this one and see what he had to offer, because he did an excellent job. Oh, and by the way, before I go to Russell, I just want to show you this. Richard Medhurst writes, this will show you how reliable the United States word is. This comes from his newsletter over at Substack, and I tweeted this. You can find all this information in my X deck for the day. If you're coming after the fact, just go to today's date, and you'll find this information. Classified documents invalidate the United States' appeal against Assange, Richard Medhurst writes. United States broke diplomatic assurances for David Mendoza. It will do the same with Julian Assange. Get ready. I wanted to prepare this and put this up right after what I read was the ruling from these people, just to show you they're playing games. We know they're playing games. They're not responding to the literal record that they have that Pompeo wanted to assassinate Assange. And they're saying, hey, United States, just promise you won't do that. Unbelievable. He didn't do anything wrong. He did right. Even according to international law and United States military law. In 2009, David Mendoza Herarte was extradited from Spain to the United States on condition he'd be allowed to serve his sentence in Spain. Classified documents revealed the diplomatic assurances given by the U.S. Embassy in Madrid and how the U.S. violated the conditions of his extradition. Mendoza spent over 6 years in the United States trying to return to Spain. Court documents show how the United States denied his transfer application multiple times. While in prison, Mendoza sued the United States and Spain for failing to uphold the conditions of his extradition and violating his human rights. Now, the circumstances of his crime are not relevant. They have nothing to do with the promises, the promissory notes, just like the Federal Reserve note, of what the United States coughs up from its dirty bowels and spews out there for fabricated, fictitious, superficial reasons. And then, of course, there's nothing behind it. The guy could have been arrested for something terrible or could have been arrested on trumped up charges. We're looking at the promise of the federal government. Mendoza's case, his case was recently taken up by the United Nations. Mendoza's case was raised last month in the English High Court, where the United States is attempting to extradite Julian Assange to the U.S. The United States has offered similar diplomatic assurances that Assange could serve a sentence in Australia. Assange's lawyers cite Mendoza's case as evidence that these assurances cannot be trusted. James Lewis, the lead U.S. prosecutor, said that these assurances are bulletproof. He told the high court that, quote, the United States have never broken a diplomatic assurance ever. Really? The lies. It's incredible. Court documents and diplomatic assurances obtained by Richard Medhurst show this to be untrue. David Mendoza Herarte was born and raised in the U.S. Well, then they could just, you know, do anything they want to him, right? Maybe they should just take care of that due to, of course, reparations. That's what it should be. His mother, being from Spain, he would go there every summer and described it to this writer as his second home. He's both an American and Spanish national. He was wanted in the U.S. for drug trafficking. By the early 2000s, he used helicopters to transport marijuana, known commonly as BC Bud, from Canada across the U.S. border into Seattle, contrary to, of course, the unconstitutional U.S. drug war. Today, marijuana is legal in Seattle. Mendoza worked in building and property development, making good money. He told me he only did this on the side to help subsidize some of his building projects. I had so many things going on, but I should never have done it to begin with. Too much ambition in my mid-20s. So there you go. There's a lot more to that story, but I wanted to give you the crux of it, the, you might say, the Farron cleavage site of where this is being levered. Now let's turn to Russell. Russell Brand doing his thing. Hit me, Russell.
But their post by Cook continues. In the meantime, he will stay caged in the high-security Belmarsh prison. He's been there for 5 years now under a regime the former UN expert Niels Melzer has described as sustained psychological torture. This case has never been about the legal facts. It's always been about buying time to disappear Assange from public view, to vilify him, to smash the main publishing platform for whistleblowers to expose state crimes, and very possibly to provide a final solution to the problem Assange posed to state to state impunity by killing him from the sustained stress of endless incarceration and trial. Now, let's have a look at how the legacy media in the form of our own but once beloved BBC presents this. You'll note that there's a curiously upbeat tone that's at odds with Stella Assange's reaction immediately after hearing this sort of quasi-verdict. Let's have a look at State Instruments and Propaganda Unit, BBC, state funded by your taxes if you're British, and how they manage this piece of propaganda and tell you that your freedom is not your business.
So more breaking news. This time the WikiLeaks founder Julian Assange has been given permission by a British court to appeal against his extradition to the US.
Actually, not true. The information and the decision has essentially been given to the US. They just have to say, no, 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 he's not in danger of death and he will be given a free trial and then he will be extradited, although there will be a review and an opportunity for him to submit more evidence. That's what they're saying. But do you notice how they're sort of conflating that? So if all you watched was the BBC, you'd go, oh, okay, that's good news. Democracy's working.
Well, we can speak now to our correspondent, Ellie Price, who's outside the High Court in London. So a significant moment for him.
It is a significant moment. They have upheld, as I say, three counts of his appeal, which include him receiving essentially the ability to rely on the First Amendment, which is available to US citizens, i.e. that about the freedom of speech. So the fact that he isn't an American, I think there's assurance being now sought that he will indeed enjoy those freedoms that an American citizen would enjoy.
Enjoy. Whee! I'm enjoying my freedoms in the United States. I've been extradited to be with my mates. I'll probably be killed for publishing information that exposed the world's most powerful nation. It's justice, yeah. Woo-woo! It's justice, yeah. Woo-woo! It's justice everywhere. It's justice. We don't care if you criticize the state. Let me tell you, mate, you're going down, 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 down. Na-na-na-na-na-na-na. Justice. BBC propaganda available now.
And also to make sure that the death penalty is not imposed. Now, those assurances are now being sought from the US authorities. They've got 3 weeks to come back with those assurances, and then there'll be another hearing on the 20th of May. So forgive me, it is all rather complicated.
Almost as if we're trying to make it complicated to conceal the fact that the man who's done nothing wrong and who hasn't had a trial has been in prison for 5 years now. Wonder what it was, though, exactly, that Julian Assange said that's made powerful people so upset. Let's have a look. Julian Assange, ISIS and the Clinton Foundation are both funded by Saudi Arabia and Qatar. That's interesting. That's the kind of information that embarrasses ISIS's PR on the phone. Don't you dare say the
that we share funding with the Clinton Foundation. You know how those people behave. Have you seen what they did in the country of Haiti? Also, let's have a look at who's presiding over these judgments. Why? It's Victoria Sharp, whose family have attained high-level positions in the British establishment. Jeremy Johnson, who's previously paid to represent the interests of MI6 and the Ministry of Defence. Just the kind of institutions that Julian Assange's reporting negatively impacted. And let's give the final word on this matter to the leader of the campaign and wife of Julian Assange, Stella Assange.
I find this astounding. 5 years into this case, the United States has managed to show the court that their case remains an attack on press freedom, an attack on Julian's life. Julian is just a few days away from the fifth anniversary of his arrest and imprisonment in Belmarsh prison. He has been in Belmarsh for 5 years without conviction, and the charges against him are to punish him for publishing the truth, for publishing evidence of the war crimes committed by the country that is trying to extradite him.
Doesn't seem like much justice there. And Stella Assange doesn't seem to be clicking our heels and whooping for joy in quite the way that the BBC seem to suggest that people interested in freedom, free press, the ability to speak freely, and in particular, the ability to criticize the powerful, values that we should care about. May God bless Stella Assange. May God bless Julian Assange and his campaign for freedom. If you want.
So right. So right. Yep. And I'm so thankful for the people who cover this so well. So many good people out there doing great work. And I know so many of you watching over on X right now, feel free to drop your comments in there. Just absolutely slippery, vile stuff coming from this court. It's basically just cover for them. There's plenty more Liberty Conspiracy on Free Talk Live.
On Free Talk Live, we're bringing people to the ideas of liberty every day. From wrestling superstars like Glenn Jacobs.
You guys really are having an impact, I believe. Like I said, a lot of where I am now is due to listening to Free Talk Live. You changed my mind on some very important issues years ago.
To random people tuning in on the radio.
I was kind of stuck in the left-right paradigm. I heard your show by chance on a Saturday night. From there, I went on, joined the Free State Project, and become an amplifier. So, I mean, that's really the reason why I amp is because I know that if it wasn't for you guys being on as many stations as you are, I never would have found the ideas of liberty.
You can help more people hear the message of liberty by joining Free Talk Live's AMPS program on Patreon for as little as $5 a month. And you'll get access to special perks. Visit amps.freetalklive.com, amps.freetalklive.com.
Free Talk Live.
We return with more Liberty Conspiracy on Free Talk Live. Find Liberty Conspiracy every Monday through Friday on Rumble, Rockfin, and on my Twitter feed. That is at Gard Goldsmith, G-A-R-D Goldsmith. We continue our coverage of Julian Assange, his attempt to appeal extradition to the United States. They're giving a signal to the United States that they can do what they want to do. And then, as Marty Gardisfeld mentioned to David Knight, and Marty spoke to me a few weeks ago when we had him on as a guest, he will go to the same prison where they held Marty Gardisfeld. And they'll probably put him in solitary confinement and he'll die. They don't have to give him the death penalty. All they have to do is the continued wrongdoing of continuing to hold this innocent man who did right, as opposed to all these other people who are living off your time. It's stunning. So God bless all those people in London. If you're watching this show, even months after the fact, and you're one of those people who went down there to the courts, and I passed by those courts walking along, going down the Strand. I've gone along the areas, you know, I saw the little statue of Rumpole of the Bailey across the street. You know, it's inside. It was inside a shop there. It's tough. It's very, very frustrating, but you know, people like Stella Assange and their strength and, you know, good people around, You still try to be positive and you do your best. Look, Thomas Massie invited Julian's brother in to sit down in Congress for the State of the Union address. Now, some people are wondering about a couple things when it comes to the politics of this. And Daniel McAdams sort of brought this up as well. And so the first thing I'll just mention, when it comes to the RFK vice presidential thing, people are wondering whether or not a lot of the hardcore, like lefty Democrats who also oppose free speech, will be attracted now to RFK. He's polling at 10% in some states where he is on the ballot. In some states, they have done their machinations and they've made sure that he can't get on the ballot. Will that be a draw away from Donald Trump? No, not likely. Would it be a draw away from Joe Biden? Possibly. I don't know, because I think a lot of the Democrats who would be supporting Joe Biden are very much in favor of, don't say anything bad about the jabs. We love Anthony Fauci, even though there's tons of evidence around. We are people who love appeal to authority. And so therefore, ivermectin was awful, and we're not going to go with RFK Jr. Possibly. Right. And by the way, folks, I have to mention, we have a new advertiser, actually, now that I'm talking about the RFK Jr. stuff. So let's go over to our main, we have a very large staff here. So let's go over to our main advertiser guy and talk about what's going on. And in fact, I didn't play the news flash theme. So let's get into the news flash. And then allow our announcer guy to bring up our new advertiser. Of course, the news flash will contain something that is about to come up in the show. Let's check out the mothership, everybody, because, yes, I saw a comment. Someone said, what happened to the news flash theme? Glad you like it, because I like the P-Funk All-Stars, too. And, of course, there's a scene of me in that weird white makeup from a movie I did many years ago. So here it is, the news flash.
Gaza's waterfront property. It could be very valuable to if people would focus on kind of building up, livelihoods. So I think that it's a little bit of an unfortunate situation there. But I think from Israel's perspective, I would do my best to move the people out and then clean it up.
Yes. Oh, hello. Hello. We're Mary's parents.
Oh, well, come on in, fellas.
Hold it a second. Mary's parents burned to death last year. Wait a minute. I know you guys. You're from the News Flash.
Yeah, baby. All right. And we have to find out about that new advertiser guy. And thank you for liking it. I went right into the bridge thing and I just completely forgot to play the flash stuff. I mean, my staff members forgot to play the flash thing, and I will make sure I whip them with a wet noodle very soon. The staff here. But I do want to turn to one of our main staff guys. He's the guy who handles all of our advertising and does the classic, ads for everybody and tells everybody who's sponsoring this obviously deep state sponsored show. And so let's turn to that guy right now. Advertiser guy, tell the audience about our great new sponsor. That's right, Guard. We have a new sponsor. It is, of course, Ivermectin. Doctors score win, forcing FDA to remove statements about ivermectin. Ivermectin. The drug you shouldn't take in a world of authorities telling you should appeal to authority. There you go. Ivermectin, everybody. The appeal of appeal to authority. Whoa. Yes. Guard, we're proud to announce that ivermectin is A-OK. So long after it actually could have been useful for people in the so-called, which it wasn't, pandemic. Ivermectin. The person who found ivermectin and got it out there for people to stop parasites in Africa got a very big prize for it from the Nobel people. But unfortunately, the authorities said it was really bad and that we couldn't use it as a therapeutic. So that way they were able to get their mRNA jabs out there according to their laws that they applied to you. But now the FDA has changed course. They've agreed to remove social media posts and web pages that urge people to stop taking ivermectin. Remember this classic hit, guard? You're not a horse. You're not a cow. Seriously, y'all, stop it. Ivermectin, guard. I'm glad that we can take it now. Can you take any more government, or is there a therapeutic for that? Well, I got to say, sponsor, announcer, guy, the therapeutic is education and freedom. In fact, folks, here's a little one to sort of break the nudge the break in the show here a little bit. As Jeff Carlson says, and he notes, I think perfectly appropriately, the FDA has reportedly, and of course, this is now, you know, over a day old, but the FDA has reportedly changed their position on ivermectin and agreed to remove all negative posts. They should, at a minimum, issue a formal announcement and apology. How many people might have been saved if the FDA had acted honestly? Yeah, that's right. And of course, will any of the members of the FDA be held personally liable? No, of course they won't be held personally liable. Not a chance. Not a chance at all. So with that stated, everybody, let's go over into, remember how I mentioned Thomas Massey invited Julian Assange, Julian Assange's brother, to sit with him to be his guest at the State of the Onion address, right? Well, there is word that Benjamin Netanyahu will not be speaking because the Israelis have become upset that they're not getting enough money from the United States. Even though, as I reported, the budget, that wonderful budget, the $1.2 trillion budget that the House passed Thursday, gave to the Senate, and the Senate passed Friday, the omnibus, right? That includes the automatic, so-called automatic $3.8 billion in weapons, mostly weapons, that for the past 10 years have been going to Israel anyway. But that's not enough. Not enough. And the February package of, what was it, $16 billion that went to Israel for more weapons to slaughter more people, that's not enough, right? The cover that Biden is giving Netanyahu building that port, which is going to take a long time, when they could just open up the gates and allow more food in, that's not enough for the genocidal Netanyahu regime. And the fact that the United States budget, and I don't approve this, I don't approve any of this stuff, I'm an anarchist, I don't approve any actions by the state, that they declined to include the usual funding that they put in there for the UN relief agency that gives most of the food to the Palestinians. The fact that they blocked that, that's not enough for the Israelis. The Zionist government there was unsatisfied because, of course, they want to continue in their warfaring ways. So Benjamin Benny Netanyahu is right now not going to be speaking. They're pulling their contingent out of plans to speak. But as a reminder, let's just check out what Benny had to say when he was in Congress telling everybody that Iraq was somehow tied to the Taliban and that, of course, the Iraqi government was part of a nexus of governments that didn't see any international order and could just pick up their sticks and their weapons and go and act like the big giant or the bull in the China shop and just wreck governments all over the place. This Netanyahu testimony coming after years of United States blockages of the Iraqi economy, starvation of 500,000 women and children, bad medicine for them, all combined, killing 500,000, satisfying Madeleine Albright, obviously. But Benjamin Netanyahu mentioned, well, you got to watch out for those Iraqis because, you know, they'll throw their weight around and disrupt sovereign nations. So, of course, you better go disrupt Iraq. Remember this?
Excuse me one second. You're making a connection between the Taliban and Iraq?
Yes, I am. I'm saying that if you look at those who harbor terrorists and those who support terrorists.
I guess I was looking for a connection between September 11th and my understanding why we went to the Taliban is there was a connection there. They were harboring somebody that we believed did the act on September 11th.
Yes, that's the first reason why you did it.
Now you're going to take me from September 11th to Iraq somehow?
Yes, but I'm saying something else. I'm saying the connection is not whether Iraq was directly connected to September 11th, but how do you prevent the next September 11th? That is, you have here a system or a subset of the international system that simply disavows any constraints on the use of power. It has fueled these handful of regimes and the terrorist organizations that they harbor are fueled by a terrible anti-Western zealotry, a militancy that knows no bounds, doesn't respect any force, knows no limit.
Can you believe it? Can you believe this guy? Just astounding. No wonder people have been marching on the streets in Israel to get rid of that guy. Talk about warmongering. Now let's get into our final chunk on warmongering. And for that, we need a theme. If you're new to the show and just watching on X/Twitter, thank you for joining us. If you haven't heard this song before, it's John Lydon and Afrika Bambaataa. They teamed up to create something called Time Zone, which was a one-off. They basically did two songs. It was Time Zone doing World Destruction. Yeah, that's for sure. A disgrace. From Julian Assange to spying on Americans. Yeah, and I think the Antichrist, boy, who knows? Who knows? But let's get into the other portion of the war coverage here, everybody. And for that, I want to turn to Dave DeCamp of antiwar.com, who has done an absolutely awesome job. I would say stellar, but it sounds too much like Stella. But in fact, I'll do that in honor of Stella Assange, a Stella job, holding things up for peace every night, Monday through Friday, at just about midnight. Antiwar News with Dave DeCamp comes out on YouTube. Check it out. And of course, go to antiwar.com. Please lend them your support. But here is this facet of what you saw in the news flash. This is going to open things up. When we saw the billboard for the show tonight, we talked about Donald Trump's callous approach to Israel that is getting a little bit of applause from people. Now, Dave DeCamp mentioned that Donald Trump was not willing to give Assange a pardon. And he said, you know, to sort of follow up on what I was saying there just before I got into RFK stuff, he said, Daniel McAdams on the Ron Paul Liberty Report today said, maybe this could be an opportunity for Biden to actually one-up Trump on Assange. Assange has been in prison for so long. He's hurting so much. Maybe he could just drop the charges, let him go. And so Ron Paul said, well, that would be nice, but I don't think the people pulling Joe Biden's strings would allow that. I don't think so either. But here is Dave DeCamp talking about Trump. Check this out.
So we had a customer reach out, and they couldn't decide which knives they wanted to pick. Yeah, our support
military to help strengthen it. So he's going to be asking for new weapons and more aid and things like that while he's in the U.S. So this is a different delegation than the one that Netanyahu canceled that was to discuss the Rafah attack. All right, so the next one here, Trump says that Israel is losing a lot of support. So some interesting comments from the former president here. So Trump said in an interview with Israel Hayom over the weekend that Israel made a big mistake by broadcasting images and videos of the destruction in the Gaza Strip, saying that it's losing Israel a lot of support. Trump said in the interview that he was asked basically, what would you do if your family was killed on October 7th? He said that he would have done the same thing as Israel, like basically justifying this horrific war that's happening here. But he has also said that it's time for Israel to finish it, and because of the global opinion is turning against Israel.
So, yeah, now he's paraphrasing there, but it's not because it's wrong. It's not because innocent people are being slaughtered. It's because of public image, as Public Image Limited would say. Amazing. Stunning. Can you believe it? Now, Daniel McAdams also mentioned a little bit about this, and he said, you know, maybe it's possible that this could get some more Republicans to actually start questioning what Israel is doing there. Some Trump MAGA supporters, perhaps. I use that term MAGA too much. That's, you know, I don't do it very much, but, you know, it's really a tool now that they use against, you know, just average people that are trying to claim that they're all radicalized and so on. The Dems are trying to claim this, not Daniel McAdams or anything like that. But here's the headline. This comes from Dave's piece, but I grabbed this from Trump says, from Tyler Durden and the Zero Hedge team. Trump says Israel has to finish the war as it's losing a lot of support. And he says former President Trump said in an interview with Israel Hayom over the weekend that Israel made a big mistake by broadcasting images and videos of the destruction of the Gaza Strip. Well, their own soldiers are taking shots that show they're engaged in war crimes, that show that they are the occupying forces, that show that they have killed innocent people, slaughtered them, women and children, invaded their homes, taken their belongings. They are the occupying force. And Trump isn't speaking out about that. It's because it might look bad. Amazing. The interviewer then claimed. Oh, sorry. Yeah. The interviewer then claimed that terrorists were hiding in the buildings. And Trump replied as follows. Go and do what you have to do, but don't do that. And I think that's one of the reasons that there has been a lot of kickback. If people didn't see that. Every single night, I've watched every single one of those. And I think Israel wanted to show that it's tough, but sometimes you shouldn't be doing that. Showing or doing? What? Just unbelievable. Unbelievable. But, of course, as I mentioned, it's part of the family. And you saw that in the flash, the preview, which, of course, came a little later in the program tonight. But here is Jared Kushner speaking at Harvard. You might have seen some of this. The folks at Grand Theft World put this out there thanks to the Young Turks, who are doing an excellent job covering the Middle East. Here's what Jared Kushner had to say about the real estate value of all that land that has seen so much death and destruction from the occupying force of the Zionist state of Israel and Benjamin Netanyahu, the war criminal. Here we go.
Gaza's waterfront property. It could be very valuable to if people would focus on kind of building up, you know, livelihoods. So I think that it's a little bit of an unfortunate situation there. But I think from Israel's perspective, I would do my best to move the people out and then clean it up. I think proactively recognizing a Palestinian state would essentially be rewarding an act of terror.
I mean, are we at all surprised that those sociopathic comments are coming out of the mouth of Jared Kushner, Donald Trump's son-in-law, of course, who was at Harvard engaging in conversation about the ongoing war in Gaza and, more importantly, what should happen to Gaza following this brutal war that's been carried out by the Israeli government and the IDF. Now, throughout the interview, he conflated terrorists with Palestinian civilians, favorite tactic that I've noticed on social media among those who want to provide cover for anything that Israel does. And he clearly supports the idea of pushing Palestinians out of Gaza, which, you know, can be described as ethnic cleansing, if I'm not mistaken, Cenk.
Yeah, that's actually the very definition of ethnic cleansing. And, well, this, he put a cherry on top so we could steal their land. Oh, okay. Well, thank you for clarifying.
Exactly.
So with that said, why don't we go to our first video and we'll dig right in.
It's unfortunate that nobody's taking the refugees, but also there are real fears on the part of Arabs, and I'm sure you talk to a lot of them, who think once Gazans leave Gaza, Netanyahu's never going to let them back in.
Maybe, but I'm not sure there's much left of Gaza at this point. So, you know, if you think about even the construct, like, you know, Gaza was not really a historical precedent, right? It was.
All right, let's just stop for a second. Just unbelievable. It's unfortunate what's happening. What's happening? How many decades would you like to use that passive voice term to describe what's happening, Jared, in the displacement of people whose families lived there and in many other areas that the Israeli government took from those people? Shipping them off, the Nakba, all those things. How about that? Did they just happen? Or did evildoers slaughter people and take their property and then take over a land, corral people in it, control the water and electricity to such that a few weeks ago I read a piece from 2018 describing the lack of water in Gaza because of Israel? And now has told people to move south into Rafah and Khan Yunis into areas that they said would be protected areas for the innocent people. And now they're saying, of course, we've got to go in there and do our operations there. And they've been bombing those. How about 90% of the hospitals being destroyed? How about kids having to go through amputations without anesthetic because they stop it at the checkpoints? How about people going to the food trucks and being slaughtered by Israeli troops? How about people in UN buildings that handle the food getting slaughtered by Israeli troops? It's good waterfront property, is it? And of course, there's no history there at all. And how about this? Even if there weren't history, those people living in Israel, most of them don't have any family ties to that area. They came from Europe. They didn't come from the Middle East. They're not even Semitic. So if you're talking anti-Semitic, is it okay to criticize the operations of state policy and say the Zionist state of Israel is an aggressive, warmongering, bloodthirsty, imposed state? Because all states are imposed. You can't escape that. How about on the physical land? Also imposed. There's plenty more Liberty Conspiracy on Free Talk Live coming up.
Free Talk Live.
We return with Liberty Conspiracy on Free Talk Live. Find Liberty Conspiracy every Monday through Friday at Rumble, Rockfin, and my Twitter /X feed at Guard Goldsmith. And of course, I invite you anytime to subscribe free over at my Substack. And remember, every Sunday you'll find at least 20 news stories plus video links pertaining to freedom. And I get to add contextual information that hopefully will help break apart those news stories and let us derive intellectual ammunition to take with us for future situations that are similar. Let's continue with Liberty Conspiracy on Free Talk Live. You don't need me to moralize, so let me continue here. I'm going to go back just a little bit here so you can get this. Again, if you think this is valuable, this coverage, you want to, you know, get it out there to people on Rumble. Later, if you're watching after the fact, just click. You'll see the visuals pop up in the show if you scroll along. Oh, that's the point. And you can send it to a friend if you think this is valuable. So let's continue here. Going back just a second to Mr. I want that waterfront property guy. I know just how to do it and how to develop land. I wonder what he would have said about Indian tribes.
That nobody's taking the refugees. But also there are real fears on the part of Arabs, and I'm sure you talk to a lot of them who think...
Oh, by the way, the idea that somebody has to take the refugees, that his friends in Israel, and by the way, he's good friends with Benjamin Netanyahu, that his friends are creating, the idea that he can now impose another imposition on people in other countries, so it's really bad that they're not taking these refugees. Your friends are creating the refugee problem. And now you're assuming that other people should be responsible for taking them in? Is that it? Is that the story? Man, unbelievable. I had not seen Jared Kushner speak more than this before in my life. This is my first real exposure to this guy. I'm stunned by this guy's absolute robotic, slippery, lizard-like approach to human beings. And the way that he, and I don't want to over-psychoanalyze, but he seems to accept a lot of these notions, terminologically, normalcy bias, or perhaps he's actually much more dastardly and knows the evil of these things. But this is oftentimes, as Hannah Arendt might, to paraphrase Hannah Arendt, might say, this is the way that evil becomes blasé. Just repeatedly using these terms, that sort of thing. And this is their operational structure. So it's fine. We're comfortable on this operational structure, on this platform that we on which we operate. And all the people there, they're just insects that we can move around and we can fumigate places and get rid of them. That's just amazing.
Gazans leave Gaza, Netanyahu's never going to let them back in.
Maybe, but I'm not sure there's much left of Gaza at this point. So, if you think about even the construct, Gaza was not really a historical precedent, right? It was the result of a war, right? You had tribes that were in different places, but then Gaza became a thing. Egypt, used to run it. And then, over time, you had different governments that came in different ways. So you have another war,
Gaza exists because of Israeli aggression. That's why. Because they took the homes of the Palestinians there, and then they created this thing called Gaza to put them into. And of course, Netanyahu and Western powers like the U.S. government pushed for the Palestinian state, so-called, there in Gaza to be run by Hamas. Amazing.
And, borders are changed historically over time.
Borders are changed historically over time.
Wow.
On that note, though, Ryan, it was when you were talking about how Netanyahu was making the point.
Just listening, folks, we switch over from the Young Turks and their good coverage. This is Counterpoints, and they're covering similar quotes from Jared Kushner.
Having people who can string English sentences together, it reminded me that Jared Kushner
unfortunately can string sentences together.
He was stringing those sentences together in an interview with The Guardian, and there is video of a fascinating exchange between The Guardian and Jared Kushner about Gaza. Let's take a look at that.
Syria, when there's refugees, Turkey took them, Europe took them, mm-hmm. Jordan took them. For whatever reason, here in Gaza, there's refugees from the fighting, from an offensive attack that was staged from Gaza. Israel's going in to do a long-term deterrence mission. And it's just, it's unfortunate that nobody's taking the refugees, but also.
Let me ask you, sorry to be pausing again. Would you describe this as a long-term deterrence action or position? To me, that tells me this guy knows what's going on and he's just trying to put all sorts of paint. He's putting lipstick on the evil, devilish pig. Saw some great comments in Rockfin and Rumble, by the way, everybody. We're going to get right to those. So if I missed anything, drop it down in there. Get ready. This is, coming up, we'll go to Rockfin and Rumble before we close off. Here we go.
Real fears on the part of Arabs, and I'm sure you talk to a lot of them, who think once Gazans leave Gaza, Netanyahu's never going to let them back in.
Maybe, but I'm not sure there's much left of Gaza at this point. So, if you think about even the construct, Gaza was not really a historical precedent, right? It was the result of a war, right? You had tribes that were in different places, but then Gaza became a thing. Egypt, used to run it. And then, over time, you had different governments that came in different ways. So you have another war, usually when wars happen, borders are changed historically over time. And so my sense is I would say, how do we deal with the terror threat that is there? So that it cannot be a threat to Israel or to Egypt, right? I think that both sides are spending a fortune on military. I think neither side really wants to have, a terrorist organization enclave right between them. And Gaza's waterfront property, it could be very valuable to if people would focus on kind of building up
livelihoods. You think about all the money that's gone into this tunnel network and into all the munitions, if that would have gone into education.
Just to point out, the tunnels mostly were built earlier by the Israelis, but we'll continue.
Or innovation.
Biden should recognize the Palestinian Authority unilaterally as a state, and MBS should go to Jerusalem like Egyptian President Anwar Sadat did in 1977, and he should say, I'll normalize with Israel, I'll recognize West Jerusalem as your capital, and I'll even pay to rebuild Gaza if you recognize a Palestinian state with East Jerusalem as its capital. What do you think? Good idea?
No, I don't think that's a good idea. I think that there's certain elements that are correct. I think proactively recognizing a Palestinian state would essentially be rewarding an act of terror.
Waterfront property, he said, if the money from the tunnels would have been redirected, I think he said towards education and innovation, but it was in the context actually talking about how you could redevelop Gaza into, quote, very valuable waterfront property. Brian, what's your reaction to that?
Well, there was also that line he had where he said, for whatever reason, there's refugees.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, for whatever reason, interesting. Then he also said that Gaza is a construct. Like, so just Google to make sure. And you know, Wikipedia says the known history of Gaza is that spans 4,000 years.
Mm-hmm.
Pompeii took it at one point. Alexander the Great took it at one point. Bedouins.
Yeah. So there you go, everybody. Just amazing, amazing stuff to see. And so let's get your comments, one and all, and see what you have to say over at Rockfin and Rumble Chat. Great number of folks watching on X. Really appreciate you doing so. And again, if you want to, you know, great coverage, Young Turks, those folks we just saw, Grand Theft World did amazing coverage of this. And I went in and took some of the stuff that Grand Theft World was putting out there, got some of my own stuff, wanted to put that together for you. As well as that unbelievable Donald Trump statement. I mean, just absolutely heartless, totally heartless. And, you know, it's possible someone could talk to Donald Trump and say, what exactly did you mean there? Like, you didn't really mention the lives being lost. Do you sentimentally feel about this? What's going on? Because your son-in-law certainly doesn't seem to care very much about this at all. There is one little bit more that I want to show from Counterpoints here.
In fact, the IDF has tragically destroyed archaeological sites that are some of the most kind of important to archaeology in the world, have destroyed buildings that are from the 6th and 7th century.
But, you know, there's no history there or anything like that. You know, it's just very important to keep it in mind. So first, over in Rockfin. First, I saw a while back Tom Cooper is there, and Tom Cooper was talking about solitary confinement. Thank you. If you're just listening and you want to find links, again, this is what I like so much. And hopefully tomorrow night I'll be able to open up, or Friday night I'll be able to open things up. I'll put the link in if you want to join me on the show, either by audio or by cam, to just comment about something over the past few days, something that's in your mind or something we discuss on the show at that moment. I'll put that link in and you'll join me in the conspiracy. We'll hang out. And, you know, it's like taking calls, but a little bit more than that. And Tom Cooper put in a couple links about a guy who was in solitary confinement for, I think, 40 years. And it's just, thanks, Tom. That's a great resource. I really appreciate it. And there's more in there that I want to check out. But first, I want to thank Carlos Rex over on Rockfin. Carlos contributed $10 to the show, and I really appreciate that. That's really, really great. Really important to me to be able to, you know, start setting something up, and I'm going to try to figure out what I'm going to do on a budget and things like that, trying to make sure this sustains itself. And in addition to the work that I do contractually for MRC TV, which isn't, I'm not like a full employee over there. So I really appreciate them, you know, asking me to do the work over there that I get to do. So that's really nice. And over at Rumble Chat, Birdhouse Blues says, so they're killing refugees because of embedded Hamas terrorists. And Jared wants countries to take in these same refugees. Doesn't make sense. No, it certainly doesn't, because, of course, Jared knows that they're indiscriminately killing innocent women and children, and yet he feels so bad that the innocent women and children can't get brought into a place, you know, the ones that aren't killed. He doesn't seem to mention them. Strange, isn't it? strange. He's upset about the countries that might not want to answer to his force or his compulsion, if he could do it, to get these people to take in the refugees into their countries. But he has no problem with the Israeli government and his friend Benjamin Netanyahu, who visits his house, doing a lot worse. So with that stated, I'll give you this last quick reminder. Don't forget, government funding bill signed by Biden includes $3.8 billion in so-called military aid for Israel, patently unconstitutional, and cuts funding to UNRWA. So that's the last bit for that. But I want to do something else here and talk about the United States government and a theme that we can play for it and about all states. If you're not familiar with these guys, they're the Sons of Hercules with Gimme Some. Straight out of San Antonio, Texas, folks. The Suns. Yes, they are very good. From reparations to just general taxation, it's always so hopefully I can entice people or encourage people to fight back in any way they possibly can that is peaceful. Yes, indeed. Great stuff. Got to meet these guys in Las Vegas at the Vegas Shakedown. Bunch of great garage bands there. Fantastic to meet those guys. And so let's do this, one and all. I'm going to go back here and give you a little something from MRC TV about how the government in Washington, D.C. wants to facilitate the taking of people's firearms. Here it is, everybody. Kamala Harris.
In a move indicating that they have no
intention. You know that voice. Here it is.
In a move indicating that they have no intention of ending their tax-funded attacks on the right to keep and bear arms, Attorney General Merrick Garland and Vice President Kamala Harris, with great fanfare, used taxpayer funds to announce that the Biden administration has created a new bureau to help state governments impose and enforce so-called red flag laws on their residents and, yes, steal their guns without due process. Hi, everyone. I'm Gardner Goldsmith for MRC TV, and here's the story. At last count, 22 states have passed and 21 states have enforced these so-called laws, which they've given myriad Orwellian titles such as Extreme Risk Protection Order, Risk Warrant, that term used in Connecticut, a title that, of course, undermines the meaning of the word warrant. They've also used the term gun violence restraining order, that one in California. And if it's really a restraining order, then why does the state seize a personal belonging without trial? And they've used more. And the state of Maine has a yellow flag order that allows the government to arrest a targeted person, put him or her through a psychological exam, then get a so-called court order, not a warrant, to search for and seize property as is required by the Fourth Amendment, and then take a gun without any trial or even an accusation of criminal activity. Evidently aware that this kind of towering malfeasance on the part of government gets a lot of pushback on a national level, Harris, Garland, and their ilk have done what Biden has done when it comes to making taxpayers cover the debt of college loan recipients. They've made an end run around clear constitutional prohibitions that should stop them. Richard Luscombe writes for The Guardian, quote, the launch of the Federal Extreme Risk Protection Order Resource Center, ERPO, follows Joe Biden's establishment of the White House Office of Gun Violence Prevention in September, which the president tapped Harris to lead. Operated through the Johns Hopkins Center for Gun Violence Solutions and paid for by a Justice Department grant, ERPO is designed to help state and local governments, law enforcement, and others, including behavioral health and social service providers, optimize the use of red flag laws, Harris said. Curiously, despite the fact that the Constitution contains no provision for the feds to give grants to colleges, and despite the clear wording of the Second Amendment stating that Congress shall make no law infringing the right to keep and bear arms, Luscombe also observes that this new office will provide training and technical assistance, including educational opportunities and workshops for a wide variety of stakeholders. How nice. We get to enjoy that stakeholder term again. It's the current rhetorical fave that tyrants use when trying to look inclusive, when attempting to make people believe that they're respecting individual rights while they attack individual rights and decide that you are not your own stakeholder with God-given rights. It seems a lot like a velvet glove around an iron fist of fascism. Luscombe continues, quote, only 21 states have implemented red flag laws only. And the White House said that only six of those states have taken advantage of $750 million in funding that the Biden administration made available through the 2022 Bipartisan Safer Communities Act, BSCA, yeah, BS for sure, for crisis intervention initiatives such as red flag programs and mental health drug and veteran treatment courts. Of course, if you watch your local news in any of these areas, you're likely going to see unquestioning celebration of the funds. You'll likely see little to no questions regarding the unconstitutionality or immorality of the red flag laws or the Bipartisan Safer Communities Act. And you won't see any such questions in Luscombe's Guardian piece, despite his report having a direct tie to a profoundly important portion of the Constitution, and despite the threats to liberty such red flag statutes represent. One person who has bothered to pay attention to rights and the Constitution is Congressman Thomas Massie, Republican of Kentucky, who Saturday posted this on X. What the hell is this evil? A federal red flag center. We did not authorize this. Announced, of course, just hours after the omnibus passes. Ann Massie also posted the fatuous self-congratulations Merrick Garland issued as part of his and Kamala's public relations blitz. That's the one in which he said, quote, the launch of the National Extreme Risk Protection Order Resource Center will provide our partners across the country with valuable resources to keep firearms out of the hands of individuals who pose a threat to themselves or others. The establishment of the center is the latest example of the Justice Department's work to use every tool provided by the landmark Bipartisan Safer Communities Act to protect communities from gun violence. Since, of course, all political governments operate only by threatening people with violence if those people don't want to hand over their hard-earned cash, and since all government attempts to infringe on our right to keep and bear arms are enacted with the threat of government-held guns that are behind them, that kind of language from Garland is more than a bit hard to swallow. But it's worse than just the inverted morality here. It's bigger than the assumptive rhetoric and the fact that there's no enumerated power for this money shoveling or the feds to even open such an office. As I noted for MRC TV, all so-called red flag statutes breach numerous portions of the Bill of Rights. How can a person be punished if he or she hasn't been accused of a crime or found guilty after due process? You know, this incredible attack on the Constitution and rights not only presents those questions, it already has seen terrible abuses. On November 5th, 2018, police in Anne Arundel County, Maryland, killed Ferndale resident Gary Willis shortly after 5 a.m. as they attacked his home under the unconstitutional and immoral auspices of executing, you got it, a red flag statute.
Thanks for listening to Free Talk Live and Liberty Conspiracy. Keep fighting for freedom, all. This is Gardner Goldsmith. Really appreciate you tuning in.
Free Talk Live.
Welcome to Liberty Conspiracy on Free Talk Live. You can listen to Liberty Conspiracy live every Monday through Friday at 6 p.m. Eastern Time on Rockfin, Rumble, and on my Twitter/X feed at Gard Goldsmith. You can also find my Substack. Of course, just look for the Gardner Goldsmith Substack and find my work at mrctv.org. As Spinal Tap said, everybody, they said, give me some money.
I'm nobody's fool. I'm nobody's clown. I'm treating you cool. I'm putting you down. But baby, I don't intend to leave empty-handed. Give me some money.
So we have a lot of questions. Obviously, we have a lot of questions about this. But one thing we don't have to question is what is written in the U.S. Constitution and what they are doing there to try to cater and play favorites and even say that it is essential for the United States. And now I want to welcome my guest to talk about what he experienced. Next 10 minutes or so, we're going to be joined by Glenn Jacobs, mayor of Knox County, and a man who can relate to us his experience as the United States tried to step in and claim that they could do everything on the federal side, even tell us what jobs were essential and what jobs were not essential. Glenn Jacobs is with us. Hi, Glenn. How are you? And good morning.
Good morning, Gard. How are you doing?
I'm doing great. Welcome to the David Knight Show. I usually see you in other forms. It was great to see you weekend before last. I really appreciate being able to see you. Yeah. Great to see you. You gave us a great speech. And folks, if you're not familiar, Glenn is down in Tennessee. He also used to live up in New Hampshire. We got to know each other real well. A lot of pro-liberty themes we would discuss, have great times. And Glenn is down in Tennessee now, and he's the mayor of Knox County. And Glenn, during his speech here in New Hampshire a couple weeks ago, stopped up for the Free State Project, gave a terrific speech about some of his experiences in his position as mayor of Knox County, meeting with some of the officials from Washington. And in particular, we have Deborah Birx, right, Glenn?
Yes, sir.
Now,
quite
Glenn,
an interesting conversation we had.
Oh, yes, indeed. I happened to report from MRCTV about a couple things. One was the fact that Deborah Birx, and I'll put this on the screen for both of us, Deborah Birx admitted in Washington in April that if someone dies with a positive PCR test, they're counting it as a death from COVID, caused by COVID, which, of course, means that no one can ever know how many people died from this virus that they said was a pandemic, but they can't say it was a pandemic. We also know that Medicare subsidized hospitals to the tune of sometimes four times what they normally would have gotten from insurance if they got people on breathing apparatuses and claimed that they had been dealing with them for COVID. You met with Deborah Birx. When was this? And tell the audience of the David Knight Show a little bit about just what she revealed to you behind closed doors, Glenn.
Yeah, this was in 2020 when COVID was kind of really kicking up. And she came to Tennessee. The reason for that was she was touring all the Southeastern Conference schools. So she had been to Kentucky, to Lexington, she had been to Tuscaloosa, Alabama, and came here. And what our media did locally is, oh my gosh, things are so bad that Deborah Birx is coming. Well, it was actually just a routine thing that she was doing, going around the country telling people what to do. But nevertheless, it was not like we were having this big emergency here that required a White House intervention.
It was Deborah Birx on tour. I could have got the tour. I could have got a tour scarf.
Yeah.
Forget the
T-shirt. Exactly. I wish I'd gotten a T-shirt. I'd have thrown it in a bonfire later. But in any case, if you're so inclined, please pick up and read a copy of Scott Atlas's book, A Plague Upon Our House, in which he lays out what was going on behind the scenes. And we all think of Fauci as being the COVID guru. Well, Fauci was the face of it, but it was really Birx who was the architect of everything going on. And recently she even admitted that, you know, this whole thing about 15 days to flatten the curve was really a Trojan horse to bring in the lockdowns and much more long-term restrictions on the American people. But when she came here, we met at the University of Tennessee in one of their big conference rooms. And there were, oh gosh, probably 20 people there. They all had PhDs and MDs with the exception of me. It's in the room. And we're all sitting there wearing masks, sitting 25 feet apart. And the ironic thing about the masks was you couldn't hear someone when they were talking. So they would take the mask off to talk. And I'm like, let's see, if this is supposed to be stopping spittle from coming out and spreading through the air, that's a heck of a way to do it. Nevertheless, though, what struck me was, first of all, you know, Birx, going back to Atlas's book, Birx did not actually have all this tremendous knowledge that was being ascribed to her. She was pulling statistics from publicly available stuff, such as reports coming from the states, even some websites. So what she was saying as authoritative knowledge was not at all. You know, and we hear these daily death counts and daily case counts. Well, the problem with that is, how were they getting those from? And right. In many cases, they were aggregated over a certain period of time, whether it's over the past few weeks or whatever. But they report them as one day. And these were not real time statistics. And as you said, they were very flawed because of the methodology that was being used to gather those stats.
Yes.
But the thing that really got me was, someone asked her, what should we do here? And her response was, well, you need to shut down your bars and restaurants, especially those around campus. And to their credit, someone pointed out, well, Dr. Birx, the data shows that the virus is not spreading in bars and restaurants, which, frankly, we all knew. And right. She replied, yes, that's true, but we have to send a message that this is a serious situation.
Theater.
It was a PR campaign. It was marketing. Yeah, it was theater. And that's what, throughout COVID, I mean, all the mask mandates, all those things, now we look back and we realize that, you know, masks are ineffective. The reason that doctors wear masks in operating rooms is not to prevent airborne viruses. It is to keep blood out of their faces and mouths and to keep the spittle out of wounds, okay?
Right.
Masks can be effective against bacteria, which are much larger than viruses. In order to have a mask which would be effective against the virus, you have to have a respirator because you would inhibit the airflow to the point where you couldn't breathe because that's how small viruses are. But nevertheless, we were told at one point that, you know, masks were the most important thing you could do. No one knows where the 6 foot came from. I mean, Fauci's admitted that. I think we did get a good lesson in hygiene and hand washing. That was probably productive. But that was maybe one of the few things that actually came out of it. And of course, you know, just shutting down the economy and locking our kids out of schools, I think are arguably the two biggest policy mistakes that this country has ever made.
Around
the world.
I was going to say, Glenn, I know that you fought very, very hard about mandates for the kids in schools and so on. And the composition of the Tennessee government and in your county made it very difficult to sort of combat these things after you got agreements and then you had more pressures and so on. And but you really stood tall in that area trying to go against a lot of this nonsense. And it's incredible to think that Deborah Birx can be celebrated by people in the pop media as some sort of heroine when she was just deceiving people all along. And as you mentioned, you know, Scott Atlas's book is terrific on that front. And I didn't know that, you know, back in the era of the AIDS, you know, not I won't say scare, but the initial days of AIDS, when she had found out that there was a tainted blood supply. I think I read this in Anthony Fauci's book, but I might have read it elsewhere, where she was going to have to go through a C-section, and she was aware of the tainted blood supply, and she was actually cited as having yelled out as they went into the emergency area for the surgery. She said, don't give me a blood transfusion. She was aware of it, and she didn't tell anybody else back, you know, before she joined up with the Trump campaign, the Trump team. It's amazing to see this, Glenn. And I think, unfortunately, so many people turn to these central authorities and they think they have this power. How was it for you, as you say, you know, you tried to stand up against the masking and so on, but the composition of the Tennessee government really made it difficult, right?
Yeah, I think a lot of people were shocked to see what was in our state laws concerning emergencies. Now it's true around the country. Here in Tennessee, Governor Bill Lee's a great guy. He's a solid person. But I think we were all pretty stunned to realize that under the emergency powers that he had been granted in legislation concerning emergencies and health care crises, that he could literally act as a dictator through his Department of Health. Now, he did not do many of the things that other governors did, such as Gretchen Whitmer and Cuomo and Newsom. Thank goodness. But if it had been someone else than Bill Lee sitting there, we'd have had a real problem. And, you know, that's, I think, something that everyone needs to realize is, you know, these emergency power acts, they really need to be looked at and discussed. Judge Napolitano would talk about how the whole thing was unconstitutional, what was being done at the state level, because the Constitution guarantees a Republican form of government to the states, which means you have separation of powers, which means you have a legislature and an executive. What happened during COVID was the executive became a legislator as well through executive orders. So they're just throwing out these executive orders. In many cases, the legislature was not meeting, talking about those. It was just edicts coming down from literally little kings and petty tyrants around the country. So it really did make a big difference where you lived, because so much of it depended on whether your governor would act in those ways. But nevertheless, as free people, we shouldn't have to worry about that. No one should ever be able to have those powers.
And you know, I've brought this up numerous times. You know my position on the Constitution. I would prefer it if the politicians who promise they're going to operate that way, it's always over my left shoulder. I would prefer it that the politicians who make their promises actually abide by it. And within it, the Constitution has the contract clause in there. So this model state health emergency legislation that was promulgated from Johns Hopkins in the after the 2001 anthrax scare and so on. And we saw this in New Hampshire when John Lynch was governor. I was on the radio in Manchester trying to warn people about this. Completely abrogates that portion. It's an utter usurpation of the contract clause, because if I have a contract with my employer or my employees or someone who's going to come do work on my house, and all of a sudden somebody says, you got to stand six feet apart, you have to eat outside, your employee have to wear masks. Well, that's a breach of the contract we already have. And no state legislature, it's prohibited by the Constitution, no state legislature can stop the fulfillment of a privately agreed to contract. I didn't
know a violation. Sorry, Garbitz.
Yeah.
Business shutdowns were a violation of the Fifth Amendment as well, because you were depriving people of their liberty and their property without making restitution or fair market for that. So, you know, when you look at the Constitution, it does allow for things like eminent domain, but you have to compensate the taking. And in this case, it was just everybody's out of business, your business is ruined. Oh, Well, and then of course they did make the wonderful choice of printing trillions of dollars, and the most expensive check that any of us got was the $1,300 from the federal government. But nevertheless, you know, they were depriving people of their liberty through unconstitutional takings, as well as those stay-at-home orders or shelter in place, clear violation of the Fourth Amendment. Because the police can't just stop you because you're driving down the road or because you're walking down the street. They have to have probable cause.
Yeah, well, in fact, you're supposed to get a warrant from a judge who determines that probable cause. Right.
And in this case, that's what happened. That's where there's an implied right to travel freely in the Fourth Amendment. That's where we derive that from. And that was just stepped all over. You know, all of a sudden, you couldn't leave your home. And I'm thinking, wow. America sure has changed over the past few weeks.
So true. And then of course, you've got the incentivization coming from the federal government, handing out all the money, which I think in macrocosm and in macroscope view really sheds light on the apparatus that has been constructed over decades of political machinations of the government promising governors or mayors money for your highways or this. If you conform to Title IX, if you conform to this, you'll get your Medicare money, you'll get your Medicaid money, you'll get your education money. So they've constructed this very parasitic relationship between the central government, which, of course, is now $35 trillion in debt and is accruing another trillion every 100 days. And the states, which themselves often can't balance their own budgets. And so they rely on those other people. And the whole time, not only is the value of the monetary system being depreciated with every dollar that they're spewing out there, but the actual memories of what the Constitution says are being eroded by years and years of normalcy bias, I think.
I agree with you. I was speaking with a United States congressman, pretty good guy, and he pointed out that Constitution, you know, it's a flawed document, but it's the best thing that we have. It's the best thing, frankly, it's ever been created. But one of those flaws is that the federal government should never been allowed to dole money out to the states.
Yeah, you know, and so
that's
true.
Exactly what happens is they just bribe the states essentially with their citizens' own money in many cases.
Oh, so that, and the future progeny's new money. Yeah. And their earnings, their toil, you know, and you know, Glenn, you and I often talk about economics, and you know, this is one of the things I try to mention to people that when I go into class and I ask the students to look at the early the fundamental machines, you know, the simple machines, the lever, the wheel, the inclined plane. And I say, you know, all those things, human beings, they didn't sit down at tables and say, I'm going to invent the inclined plane. You know, cavemen used an angle so that they wouldn't need two people to lift something. One guy could push something up a ramp. Over distance, you're decreasing the amount of effort per unit, but you're increasing the number of units, so it makes it easier. Now you freed one person. You become more efficient. That's what we're all trying to do. But the whole time they're putting out this money, they're borrowing, saying that it's helping us, it's actually destroying our inclined planes. And they're making us work harder for the things that we want. It's absolutely, it's crazy. It's really sad. You look at this Key Bridge situation. There's a very in-our-face example of a number of constitutional errors and economic errors and moral errors that these people are making. Yes, it might be important for the infrastructure. Yes, it might be important for this or that. It's in Maryland. I don't live in Maryland. And they can try to make an argument for me to say, well, we're doing what's right for you because we got to fix that so you can get sugar and your prices won't be so high. I'm sorry, but if you're going to open up that Pandora's box, then the government can do anything to facilitate ease for me to get anything. You can't do that morally and constitutionally. As I mentioned at the start of the show, they can only have control over three forms of land: military garrisons, Washington, D.C., and territories. I don't see interstate highways as military garrisons. They're not supposed to exist, but they have been existing for decades. So I think there are a lot of lessons to be learned here, and especially from what you saw with Deborah Birx, personality, person to person. You saw the face of it. And, you know, you weathered the storm, Glenn, and it's great to see that you're still down there doing what's right. It's very difficult, I'm sure, for you to have gone through all those things and seen the problems that some of the kids experienced because of this. But you stood tall, and I appreciate that very much.
Well, thank you, Guard. I appreciate the kind words. And I think my one message is that folks shouldn't forget about what happened during COVID. And it seems like we're all so desperate to move on that we are. And the people that caused these enormous problems, and in many cases, killing folks, not deliberately, but through their policies, and even realizing that the most logical explanation for how this coronavirus came to be in the first place was gain of function experiments that the U.S. was helping to fund in another country. We should never forget those things. And the people that caused this need to be held accountable, because this is one of the worst political and economic disasters in American history.
Wow. Well said, Glenn. I'm delighted to have you as a friend. It's great to have you here. And I know you got to go. You got to do business down there. I'll look for you on Twitter. How can people follow you on Twitter, Glenn?
My Twitter handle, or X, I guess, X. Now, but I still call it Twitter. It's at Glenn with two N's, Jacobs TN. So it's GLENNJCOBSTN. That's also same on Instagram. And then they can also follow me on two places on Facebook, either the Knox County Mayor Glenn Jacobs page or Jacobs for Mayor.
Okay. All right. Sounds good. Well, I will talk to you again off the air, Glenn. I hope you have a great day down there. Like I said, I might be seeing you looking around in Tennessee, and it'd be great to see you again. After seeing you last week, I'm like, oh, I got to see him again as soon as possible. And Glenn, before we go, I'll leave you with this as you sign off. I know you've got to fly, but we'll leave with this. We'll let you go, and we'll let the audience experience the wonderful Deborah Birx as she admitted something and didn't seem to realize she was admitting it. Thanks, Glenn. We'll talk to you soon.
Thanks, Glenn.
Take care, man. All right.
It doesn't make any sense.
What'd you find?
All of these books are under $5 at thriftbooks.com.
Hey, Dr. Fauci or Dr. Birx. Can you talk about your concerns about deaths being misreported by coronavirus because of either testing or standards for how they're characterized?
So I think in this country, we've taken a very liberal approach to mortality. And I think the reporting here has been pretty straightforward over the last 5 to 6 weeks. Prior to that, when there wasn't testing in January and February, that's a very different situation and unknown. There are other countries that if you had a pre-existing condition, and let's say the virus caused you to go to the ICU and then have a heart or kidney problem. Some countries are recording that as a heart issue or a kidney issue and not a COVID-19 death. Right now, we're still recording it. And the great thing about having forms that come in and a form that has the ability to mark it as COVID-19 infection, the intent is right now that those, if someone dies with COVID-19, we are counting that as a COVID-19 death.
Can you be sure? I mean, you hear from coroners that that's not necessarily the case. Or are you sure? How can you be confident about that? And is there any concern that it skews the data?
Yeah. Is there any concern? Perhaps there should have been some concern, right? Yes. And don't forget, hospitals got paid more if patients were listed as COVID-19. And kudos to USA Today for doing the fact check back in 2020, April of 2020. And of course, I'd love to get your comments. Let's hop over to Rumble and welcome everyone to the David Knight Show. I'm Gardner Goldsmith. You might know my work from MRC TV, and I appreciate you finding my work online. If you want to follow me, it's at Gard Goldsmith. My Liberty Conspiracy work, I contractually don't advertise my Liberty Conspiracy work for the MRC TV, the Media Research Center people want to do work for them. But they do let me mention my Twitter handle, the X handle. So that's at Gard Goldsmith. And boy, it's just great to be filling in for David again. Prayers for David that everything goes okay for him as he goes through some medical tests today. And over at Rumble, I saw a very key point here from Calf B, I think it is. Great education and points on the Constitution, but we are dealing with Marxists intentionally refusing to recognize it. Absolutely. Absolutely right. It's very clear. you know. And unfortunately, I think a lot of people get caught up in, they hear that totemic term, constitution, and so on and so forth, but they don't seem to read it. They just seem to take it as, well, that's a reassurance that they're operating according to this wonderful thing that evokes memories of patriotism and things like that, July 4th and the Declaration of Independence and so on and so forth. They don't even know the definition of rights anymore. You know, kids are told by pop media people that people have a right to the fruits of someone else's labor. People don't have positive rights to things. And by positive, I don't mean good. I mean posited by politicians. Positive. Positivism. They have negative rights. They have a right to be left alone. And, of course, because you were granted these rights by God. Thanks for listening. You can watch every Monday through Friday at 6 p.m. live on Rumble, Rockfin, and my Twitter X feed at Guard Goldsmith.
This is Mark Edge with Free Talk Live. Mark Warden with PorcupineRealEstate.com is one of the best real estate agents I've ever worked with. I've been through about 24 real estate transactions in my life, and I feel like I know what I'm doing, but there's always the things that you don't know that you don't know. Mark Warden with PorcupineRealEstate.com found a problem with the house that I was buying that ultimately saved me $65,000. He's a consummate professional, holds his people to his own high standards, and I would unequivocally recommend him for any real estate purchase in New Hampshire. Don't sell yourself short. Contact PorcupineRealEstate.com.